Accession number 30408, Major Bob Godfrey, Reel 17. Now, so you'd got the... Now, did you actually carry out interviews then?
Yes, I did, yeah. Yep.
And did you record them? Or
I recorded them. I don't have any of the tapes left now, all gone. They were rudimentary, fragmentary tapes, really, but... I talked to officers, retired officers. I talked to retired warrant officers, sergeants, regular private soldiers, national service private soldiers. I got lots of cooperation. I mean, I have to say again, you know, the difference between the Royal Norfolk and the Suffolk can be seen if you go to Minden Day in Bury St Edmunds, the Sunday nearest the 1st of August. You'll find literally thousands of people and their families and hangers-on attend our annual reunion. The Norfolks don't do it in the same way. They do it in small bits here and there, but nothing of the strength of the body, of warmth, I think, anyway, of the Suffolk Regiment.
And how did you decide, because when you get a lot of personal experience, you have to decide who's... No, it's not a matter of telling the truth, but... Yeah. You know, in an interview like this, who's misremembering dates, things, you know, people getting two similar incidents mixed up.
Yes.
How did you craft your way through? I mean, did you use the war diary? But were you aware that war diaries aren't always exactly true?
No, they're not always perfect. No, but I did go, I used the war diaries.
Was that your outline?
That, I suppose, was the outline. I knew, I did it, each chapter is devoted to a tour of duty. The final demise of the 2nd Battalion, and then the others were all centred on the 1st Battalion, and then there was, in its different postings, then there was one on the 4th Battalion, the TA Battalion, and then there was one on the depot. And then there were a whole set of appendices with honours and appointments and so on. I mean, I have to say that it is, you know... There's very little criticism within that book. I mean, it was I was writing my own regiment's history. It was true and factual.
So you just put it down as you saw it. And did you didn't use quotes though from people? You just used it to inform the text.
Yes, that's correct. Yes, and I thanked a certain number of people who've been particularly helpful, and I said that there are many other people have helped me, and I can't list them by name in the acknowledgements, but they will find their names in the index. I think I said that.
That came out in 1988.
Yes, that's right. Yep.
Now, and then you did another one, but this is for the Royal Norfolk. So yeah. Was that the next one you did? I'm never quite sure.
Well, the next thing I did, from 1988 to 1989... I was invited by the Royal Norfolk Regiment, living here in close to Norwich, I was invited by them to undertake the research for the shift of their museum from Britannia Barracks up on Mousehold Heath into the Shire Hall, the old law courts, next door to the Castle Museum. So I did that, and through doing that I met the curator in the Norfolk Museum Service, who was to be overall responsible from the Museum Service point of view of taking on this, and I was the military figure, and I was the archetypal military figure, bristling with moustache and everything, and he was the archetypal museum figure in sandals and jumbo cords. And we got on beautifully together. It was a wonderful relationship. We worked for 2 years up in Britannia Barracks.
And why did you need... Could you not just... I want you to explain, because not just move the museum? You know,
can I tell you? Yeah, I can explain it in very easy terms. The museum in Britannia Barracks was full of exciting things. They appeared largely in the 20th century, not only, but largely in the 20th century, and comprised individual items that had been brought to the museum, brought to the depot by the wives of deceased, or the widows of deceased officers, having found them in their trunks and things, or up in their attics, not wanting them anymore. Here, have this. This was captured by George at so-and-so, and the curator of the museum would find the best space on the wall that suited the size of object and put it up on the wall with a little note underneath it. So what you had, when David Jones, the curator, and I took over this job, you had a mass of marvellous material and the most wonderful photographic library. I don't know whether you've been to Kate Thaxton's place, you probably know. But it told no story at all, nothing. There was no historical story, there was no social story about
life in the
army. So it was just
a mishmash of interesting things.
It went from room to room, and there was something from the 18th century, something from the 20th century, something from World War II, something from Korea. And so we took the accession books and we worked out for ourselves a whole series of possible sections for the new museum, chronologically, section by section by section, and also a social aspect. Life in the 19th century army, music in the Royal Norfolk Regiment, etc., etc. And then we produced all of this and we published all our lists, in which we incorporated every single accession piece into each section. And we presented this in the first instance to the people in London who'd been given the job of creating the new museum. I forgot. You probably know.
Artistic it. Firm of some
Yeah, he was an Australian. He'd done Wimbledon, he'd done St. Thomas's.
Doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. He'd done a whole lot
Exhibition
of very
designer.
Good. Yeah. And he got these lists. And he looked at how he saw it happening. He saw the space, and he and we presented all our ideas to the committee, the museum's committee, and it went through. The museum's committee was the high and mighty and the great and the good of Norfolk, not just militarily, but we had the Lord Lieutenant, and we had Earl of Leicester and so on from up at Holkham Hall. Everybody was involved in it. And so out of this we produced what is, I don't know what you would feel about it, but it's a very good museum.
And it's in the Shire Hall.
And it's in the Shire Hall. And it has more people visit it than any of the other museums in Norfolk per capita.
So that was a success. And you did that 88 to 89.
Yeah.
Is that what gave you the idea of the book, or gave the regimental committee the idea?
Well, they read my Suffolk book. I mean, there's one more brief interlude before.
Oh, sorry.
That.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
And that was that having completed the research for the museum and having seen Kate Thaxton take it over, she had it from the outset, I was then faced for one reason or another with financial problems, and it required me to get some work, and I did an extraordinary job which I loved every minute of for 2 years, and that was work for the county solicitor in the county hall. Nothing military about it at all. So my Lancashire 1 year and my county hall here 2 years, the only bit of my life that's not been involved in with me.
And that was as an administrative officer or something?
I was his administrative officer, responsible for the registrars of birth, deaths and marriages, which meant I ran the committee, well, at least I minuted the committee for that, for those purposes.
And that was, so that would be 89 to 90, would it?
89 to 91, I think, in the end, yeah.
And then what?
And then William Reeve, now the regimental secretary, who you mentioned, I think, in your thing, said, Bob, he said, Alex Turnbull suggested we might ask you if you would write the equivalent for the Royal Norfolks that you have written for Suffolk. Very interesting, you know, that they should, after all that I've said in criticism of the Royal Norfolk, shows how close we were really. But they invited me to do it, and I said I can do it, but I'll have to ask for some financial help if I'm to do it, and that was agreed. And so I did it, and that I proceeded to do it on very much the same basis as I had done the Suffolk one. Suffolk one was published directly by Leo Cooper, of course, at the state. He was still operating his pen and sword thing. The Royal Norfolk Association published the Royal Norfolk's one. Gerald's, because Gerald's is still a big number in Norwich, advised us. Peter Gerald, the chairman of Gerald's, advised us. He couldn't publish the thing because we would not want enough copies to make it worthwhile, a firm like Gerald's. But what he did do was appoint one of his senior executives to be my sponsor from Gerald's in creating this history. And they were really wonderful about it. It was a great experience. Very lucky me. And I had their man to do all the graphics. Those maps are rather nicely done. To design the cover, the dust sheet, and the setting out of the thing. And I wrote the history. I did it in the same way, sending out interviews, questionnaires rather, and then conducting interviews.
And again, you don't have the tapes.
I don't. No.
And you enjoyed, and you wrote that, what, from 91?
I suppose it would have been 1990 to 1992.
Now,
have we got a little bit more time?
Yeah,
I'll wind up my life completely.
Oh, of course, go ahead.
In 1991, my wife and I were invited down to Sandwich in Kent to visit Holt's Battlefield Tours. And we were offered, they travelled universally throughout the world, except in Eastern Europe. Charmin and I were offered the job of becoming their Russian experts. We knew their managing director from years back in Malaysia, in fact, and so he knew our quality for a start. They offered us the job, and between 1992 and 2002, we went so many times to Russia, either to what was really Leningrad, Battlefield Tours, remembering, not St. Petersburg, to Moscow, to Stalingrad, Volgograd now, and to the Crimea, Sevastopol and the Crimea. We met so many times with so many British groups, I just don't remember how many we did. A huge number. It was one of the most dramatic climaxes to working life. We paid very well by Holtz, both of us. Charmin is a great organizer in her own right, and if I spoke Russian and knew about the military side, she was the one that organized the thing, and we made a great team, and it was a great final thing. It followed on to river cruising in Russia, and then not on a military thing, and then four Swan Hellenic cruisers in the Mediterranean and in the Black Sea again. Talking about my military subjects.
Now, the last thing we do is your membership of the regimental associations. Which ones are you a member of? Suffolk. I mean, how is it organised?
It's quite
complex.
Yes, it is. I mean, I'm not a member of the Royal Anglian Regiment. Not for any real reason. I just have never joined the Royal Anglian Regiment Association. I'm seeing the late colonel of the Royal Anglian Regiment. He's coming to see me here on the 1st of November, because he wants to talk to me about a thing I do for the Suffolk Regiment. I am a member of the Suffolk Regiment Association.
Now, what do you do for them? Tell us.
I am a member of the Council of the Suffolk Regiment Association. I attend the annual council meetings in May and put in my penneth for what it's worth. I attend Minden Day every year. But I edit the Suffolk section of a small journal published twice a year called The Britannia and Castle, which is information about the Royal Norfolk Regiment old comrades, the Suffolk old comrades, and the Cambridgeshire old comrades. So I do the Suffolk bit of that. We are sort of hoping to wind this thing up and put it across to the Castle, the Journal of the Royal Anglian Regiment, within the next sort of 18 months or so, because everybody's getting a bit long in the tooth.
But is it the Suffolk Regiment Association, that's still important to you, is it?
Oh, very much so, yes, yeah, absolutely.
Do you organise reunions where you see your old chums and that sort of thing? So, I mean, is that an active part
well,
of it?
Well, that Minden Day is the big day. We have the church service and then the address by the president, and then we mingle around and men come and say, oh, Mr Godfrey, God, I haven't seen you
and
for
this
years.
Is at Bury, is it? Bury St Edmunds?
Bury St Edmunds, yeah.
And you all go and stay there overnight? Or
no, well, we drive there. We have an officer's luncheon the day before. Which is great fun, but gets fewer and fewer in number, because we are now a dying breed. If I look at my predecessors from Sandhurst, the one who was intake one is still alive, the two that were intake two are dead, one of the intake three couple is dead, I'm alive, but, you know, we fade away, don't we?
Thank you very much.